Hey guys, before we get started with the podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our sponsors, a company that is very close to my heart, W&R Studios. They have recently launched a brand new website, cloudagentsuite.com. The Cloud Agent Suite includes the industry's most popular and award-winning product line, including Cloud CMA, Cloud Streams, Cloud MLX, and Cloud Attract. I'm sure the listeners of this podcast know better than anyone. Agents deserve better software. So check out cloudagentsuite.com and try all their products free for 30 days. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor of the Industry Relations Podcast, please drop me a line at gregrobertson@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and now on with the show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with Rob and Greg. This is one of your co-hosts, Rob Hahn, the notorious one. And on the line, because we're not together this time, is the other co-host, Greg Robertson. Greg, are you there?
Hola, Rob.
Hola, Greg.
I still get you with that one.
You always do. I don't know why. How are you this morning?
All right, man. Just like you, I've been traveling the world here, it seems like. I've got basically what you would call conference fatigue.
Yeah, you know, it's so easy. I feel like everybody needs a vacation from all the conferences you have to attend. Like, you were just at T3, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're all in nice places. It was in Miami. We were out in Palm Springs. And, we were all these kind of great hotels and venues and lots of smart people. But yeah, I got to change my lifestyle or something. I don't know.
It's a hard job, but somebody's got to do it, right?
I know, really. Like, my wife certainly doesn't believe what I do for a living, that's for sure.
You know, it is kind of true. Like, Sunny and I were talking about this. Like, we don't like to go out to restaurants because we travel so damn much.
Yeah, yeah.
We're constantly eating out. Like, great restaurants. I mean, I ain't bitching about it, but you get home, you're like, we just want like some simple, like give me a toast. Something super simple. It's just funny. No,
the weird thing for me is like getting back and I've been gone for a while, like 4 days or something, and they want to go out. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Daddy's home, so let's go out. I'm like, oh my God.
The last thing you want to do is go out.
Exactly.
The conference life.
Yeah.
Only a few would understand.
Woe is me.
I don't know if this connects to our main topic, but, you know, just give me a quick, like, 2-minute rundown of T3, like, what were, you know, some of the big takeaways or topics or whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, some similar people that were at the Disconnect for Inman, but right. A large group. I think I was talking to Jack or Stefan, and I got to believe it was 400 people there.
Wow.
So good for them on doing that.
Yeah.
It's like every other conference. It's like, to me, the conference agenda itself is almost the sideshow, right? The networking, to me, has always been the main show, right?
But
I did like it this year. Stefan kicked off things. He had stopped doing that and put it just a keynote speaker that they hired or something. So I like listening to Stefan speak. I tweeted a couple times. He is such a fast speaker that, I mean, I think that guy could be a world-class rapper.
Right. And I responded. Right? I mean, I was like, who's he most like?
Yeah, that's right. So, you did that on Facebook.
That's effects.
Yeah, no.
He's speaking real fast.
Yeah. Well, he's got that South African accent. So
that's right.
I wouldn't quite say De Antworth. He's just the speed that he talks is amazing. And I felt really good. Like at the last day of the show, he clearly was losing his voice. I'm like, oh, it's not just me.
They want effects. That's effects. Yeah.
Exactly.
They want Stefan.
So, you know, his main thing is like, it's very kind of high end, mm-hmm. kind of like Disconnect was this year was very high end. And it's hard to criticize because I really do believe he's doing it for, you know, the sake of the industry, right? And there's a dichotomy there, I think, between him and Brad. To me, Brad is all about a vibe and really emotional. And like, he's getting out there as far as he wants to really change things. He wants to really see the industry move forward and he wants to be that person that does it. And it's all about emotion, right? And you have kind of Stefan, it's more of this consulting kind of McKinsey kind of vibe to it, right? It's more corporate in a way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both are different. But, you know, I think the way that Stefan and his group does it is they have no corporate sponsors.
Right.
Basically what ends up happening is
they're the corporate sponsor.
They're the corporate sponsor. They've got no competition in the room, right? That's the thing, right?
Right.
They're the one pitching their stuff. I think they do great work, but I don't know if you necessarily need to like highlight that they have no corporate sponsors when really, really, you know, they do. It's just one.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, who cares?
Right.
Right. You know, I kid the guys over there with like Jack and those guys, like listen, whether or not Zillow sponsors the bars, I don't think it's going to influence anybody here, really. Just let them buy me a drink.
Right.
Come on, man. They can highlight there's no corporate sponsors, but, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people are just kind of like a little bit of a eye rolling, you know, of like, okay, yeah, no corporate sponsors.
Right.
You know, other than that little quibble there, I mean.
So the content was solid. The conversations are good.
Yeah. I was a little bit tired because I had taken my family up to DC the week before. So I went straight from there down to there. And I was like I said, conference fatigued out. I love that shit. You know, one of the things he came up with, which I love about Stefan, is that he came up with this like booklet on the DNA of real estate. I think that's the title. I was looking at it on a plane and planned to read it. But basically it was going through like where we all came from, right? You know, how this brokerage came out.
Gotcha. The origins.
The history of real estate, basically. And I'm a geek about that stuff. So he puts out content like that. I'm going to buy that stuff all the time, right? So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Really love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's super cool.
But the biggest thing was at the show, this would be a good segue, is there was a number of rumors going on, right? And the first one was we started to hear rumblings about something going on at RPR. Mm-hmm. Bob Goldberg was actually at T3, right? So I didn't have the nerve to kind of go up there and go, hey, what's up? And I thought it would be something like they've already announced that they were cutting things 20%, right? So I thought, well, maybe they're just going to officially announce some of the rifts or something going on there, right?
Right.
But then you started hearing something about Zillow too.
Right.
And I think the Zillow and the NAR stuff got kind of conflated, where I think a lot of people thought they were kind of connected.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
Right. So in a way they were, but they weren't. But then I think it was one of the nights somebody basically came off and said that Dale was leaving.
Right.
Dale Ross, the CEO, right? He was retiring.
Right. And that turned out to be true.
That turned out to be true, right? So then they announced that. Then everybody was still focused on the, is that anything to do with Zillow's thing? So I then heard the rumor about what was going on, but I couldn't get it confirmed at all. So I kind of kept silent about it. And then booyah, man, it just dropped like a an atom bomb out there. Because I think you wrote something about this is very true, where I love the way you kind of coined these two things, which was the Zaters, right? The Zillow haters.
Yeah.
And then going from the iBuyer to the ZBuyer. I thought that was brilliant.
Thank you.
But it was a head scratcher at first.
Right.
I think people looked at it as like, well, this could actually be positive.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, because obviously that's...
Well, why don't you recap what exactly Zillow announced?
So basically what they announced was that they are expanding Instant Offers, right, which they launched last year, you know, as a test. We want to kind of check it out. They said they're going to expand into Phoenix and Las Vegas, I believe. I think they were only running the test in Orlando, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was just they were, what the new market they announced was Phoenix. They were already in the other markets.
They were? Okay, yeah. So maybe they're expanding into Phoenix. And along that way, they're actually going to start participating. So, you know, instead of it being, you know, submit a request for an instant offer, and then we're going to reach out to a bunch of investors and they'll send you offers. You know, and then a premier agent will also send you a CMA. You know, hey, don't sell to these investors. I could sell your house for much more. You know, something like that, to where they're saying now they're also going to get an offer from Zillow itself as the buyer. So it's like you submit an instant offer quote, and in theory, you know, you get two offers from, you know, We Buy Ugly Houses, from OfferPad, from BlackRock, you know, and then Zillow. And then you also get the CMA from a realtor. I mean, in a nutshell, that's the announcement. I mean, I wrote about it because I was sort of amazed at kind of the lack of negativity.
You know, right.
I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's just my impression of it. I mean, last time when Zillow announced the instant offer itself, I mean, Lord, you thought like the sky was falling in, right?
Right.
This time, you know, you had the haters, you know, you got the people who are just like, this sucks, you know, boycott Zillow. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, whatever. They'd boycott Zillow for any reason, you know. I honestly think if Zillow came out and said, we're saving the children, you know, they'd be like, boycott Zillow.
Yeah, I know,
to
totally.
The kids. So I don't pay that much attention to them. But I just haven't seen any real negativity from, like, you know, serious people, like sober people. You know, the negativity I have seen is stuff like, this is a mistake by Zillow. You know, they don't know what they're doing. You know, flipping houses isn't that easy. You know, they're going to like lose a ton of money, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, that may all be true, but unless you're a Zillow shareholder, why do you care?
Right.
That's actually what I felt about it. And Zillow shares did drop, you know,
after they
made that announcement.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess Zillow shareholders feel the same way. But, you know, for like agents and brokers to be like, you know, Zillow's a flipper. I'm like, okay, and so what? Who cares? You know, let them go out of business if that's what's going to end up happening. It doesn't impact you. I took a very different take on it. I'd love to get into it, but let me just ask you, like, what do you think about the announcement? You know, are you hearing anything different? Like, what are you seeing?
No, I think your blog post kind of summarized it perfectly, where to me, people who are bitching about Zillow are just uneducated in a sense, right? About what exactly they are and what they do. I mean, it's like railing against the newspapers back in the day. I mean, that's where I look at it, right? I think you're right. I think this one had less of a backlash than the Instant Offer program did, for sure, for sure, right? Some of the comments, and you kind of highlighted there, was, you know, people were kind of actually, you know, to even put it even further there, they were kind of excited about it, right? So, you know, hey, this means I can go into every listing presentation with basically my own investor, right by my side. I mean, holy mackerel. I mean, that's a great thing. So I'd go a little step further in saying that there was less backlash, but more people looking at it differently a little bit, right? So they may have won over some people that they had lost before, because I think if you're selling real estate, and that just that notion of having an investor with you is an interesting thing, right?
I actually forgot. I have to make a caveat, you know, a disclaimer here, which is that I did work with Zillow on the communication plan for this. I'm not like an ongoing consultant or anything, but they did reach out and ask for some help and advice on how to communicate this. So I just want to get that out there. They don't know that I'm doing this.
Right.
They don't control more beyond, how should we do this? So I just want to make sure people understand that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good.
All right, continue.
Great job, Rob.
Thank you.
If some of this advice they heeded and it came out this way, I think that's some time well spent talking to you. So good for you guys.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah.
But I mean, I agree with you.
But again, you know, and we've talked about this on this podcast before. I could put a little wet blanket on all this, right? And I don't want this podcast to be about some of my concerns or fears about this. But, you know, again,
what are your concerns or fears? I mean, you're an industry participant. I think it's valid.
Yeah. Overall, I'm just a little bit concerned about this whole iBuyer model, right?
Okay.
And I'll mention this and you'll remember, because you can just laugh your ass off here. But to me, this could turn into a payday loan kind of scenario for a lot of people where these
What do you mean?
Well, right now you're talking about how great it is because people will have certainty now, right? And timing has always been an issue for selling your house and things of that nature, right? And that's good. That's, you're talking about the top people up there, you know, probably higher on the socioeconomic scale. And this is more going to be a convenience, right? But what happens when you scrape away that layer, right? What turns out to be is that it could get in town to the range where you're now some product managers facing, well, we got to reach our numbers this month. And they're going to start preying on the uneducated and the poor that maybe own some property and then are going to try to, you know, give them a much, much lower price for their home that they can. And they're going to do that by really sophisticated marketing techniques. And and to me, that's a little bit concerning. And that to me goes back to, like, you know, what these payday loan places charge for interest in a way, right?
Right, right.
And that might be way down the road, but you look at human nature and I worry about that, where down the road, this could turn into those kind of things where now the friction on selling an asset like that is pretty high. But once you make that kind of transparent, you know, people who've inherited a home or for some reason have this and want a quick hit of cash and aren't really sophisticated enough to understand that, you know, what's going on there, they might be prey to some, and that's, I'm not saying Zillow, I'm not saying anybody, I'm just saying these models bring that stuff out.
You know what's interesting about that, though, I never thought about it, so it's a really good point. But from my standpoint, I actually think the iBuyer thing is infinitely preferable to the alternative. Let me explain what I mean by this. So, you know, again, we're not going to spend tons of time on freaking socioeconomic, you know, politics or something. But if you own property, by definition, you're sort of not poor. That's number one. Well, right? Wait, but the second part.
Okay.
The other part, though, is if you do own property, like you're low income, you're working class, and you just, you know, saved and scrimped and you put up a down payment on a house, you know, one of these 2% deals, and now you own your home. And some emergency happens, medical problem, something. And you're like, I need cash fast. In the absence of an iBuyer, your only option is to go get a HELOC, right?
Or sell it on the market.
But selling on the market, I need it fast. That's what I said. If I sell it on the market, do you know what I mean? That's not fast. By definition, it's not fast.
Right.
You know, you got to stage the home, you got to list it, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, obviously in some markets, like say you live in Seattle or Denver, you could sell it really fast. you know, stick a yard sign and, you know, 2 days later, you're going to have 17 offers. But, you know, if you're lower income, you know, probably not in those highly desirable neighborhoods anyway. So, you know, you have a medical bill, you got something, you're actually much more likely, in my opinion, to try and use your house as an ATM and get an equity loan of some kind. And then you get your ass foreclosed on. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go through an iBuyer program, yeah, they'll lowball you. I mean, we all know this. It's like, okay, well, we'll pay you $100,000 for your $250,000 house. But then the problem is, if you are low income, chances are you have some sort of mortgage on it. So you're actually not going to get any cash out of that deal, right? So that doesn't help your, I have a medical problem, you know, situation. So in a real way, I feel like that danger is actually attenuated because of that. Obviously, we already have like CFPB and Dodd-Frank and all these things that are supposed to prevent the predatory lending. So who knows? I mean, predatory lending is a lot worse, right? Because then it's literally, I bought your home, I'm going to take it over and evict it, you know, because I made you a $10,000 loan and you can't make payments on it. To me, that feels worse. You know, I don't want to take too much time spending on it, but it's a good point though. I mean, I'm sure if we sat and actually thought about it, there's probably a way of coming up with some sort of predatory iBuying experience. That like really screws over seniors, maybe seniors, because they have all kinds of equity. Right?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's where this place goes, right? Is that I don't think the players that are in there now have this in mind, really, right? But the way capitalism works, right, is one day far in the future, they got to make their fucking quarterly nut. And you can go out there and buy lists of seniors, of, you know, people with bad credit for whatever reason. They've inherited or, you know, the newspapers are riddled of people who got some inheritance from their mom or dad and they just went to spend it, you know, or just did something stupid with it, right? So I kind of would argue the point, like, you have to be well off or you have to be somewhat not poor to own property. I mean, those kind of things happen all the time, you know, over a generational kind of thing, right? So I'm not talking about all these guys now, but down the road, some poor guy's got to hit his number for the quarter. And he's going to go buy a list of seniors that own property. He's going to go buy a list of bad credit, you know, people that own property. I mean, those lists can be bought and they're going to start turning on. The boiler rooms will start lighting up the phones.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we have another kind of, you know, shady kind of, you know, you know, kind of thing going on. And it's just always what ends up happening, man. And I just, you know.
You know, before we segue, so let me, it reminds me of Margaret Thatcher saying, it's the problem with capitalism are capitalists. The problem with socialism is socialism.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Anyway, so thanks for that nice socio-philosophical.
It's funny because we were talking about our previous conferences and, you know, at that one we went to together, they had those Parker principles, right? And one of them was about making communities better, right? At the end game, I'm not sure this is – the end result of this is going to do that, right?
We got to talk about the Parker principles, by the way, because I feel like
we did that on the last podcast, I think.
All right, let's revisit it, I guess, thing, because it's pretty obvious to me that they didn't mean shit.
With who?
With the participants. I mean, again, this is a separate topic. We got to do another podcast on this.
Okay, all right.
You know, Principle 7 comes out, you know, we support open data. And then, like, 2 weeks later, NAR publishes a paper. You know, saying, oh, yeah, no, screw open data. You know, closed data is better for consumers. All right. Never mind the Parker principles then. You know.
Well, NAR's got some issues for sure. Yeah.
We have so much to talk about. All right. So listen, going back to the Zbuyer thing. Okay. I understand you have a concern about iBuyer in general because they could end up being, you know, rape a senior, you know, type of deal.
Right.
But what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
I'm hearing, again, I think more than just like you're not hearing a lot of like backlash, but more of this could be a good idea. Now, the bad stuff you're hearing is basically the stock price. If you look at the stock price, I mean, you know, if you go back a month, it was at, I think, like 57 and now it's at 47 or 48.
It's a big drop.
It's a big drop. So I think Wall Street is a bit concerned about, you know, there's a great article from Ben Thompson from Stratechery about the way the market's behaving is like, you sold us on this vision of Zillow enabling these premier agents and then taking the $9 billion in advertising and all that. And then this kind of thing seems a little bit like, he put in his blog post, he thought they were changing their business model. I don't agree with that. I think this is just going to be complementary to what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I think Wall Street is just going, what what?
Right.
You know, this seems like you're chasing something here, right?
I think somebody's going to make a effing fortune by buying Zillow now. Who knows? Maybe you'll lose your ass. I'm not a financial advisor. Don't take my advice and buy Zillow. But like, this is a lead gen play, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a lead gen play. Right. It's seller lead gen play. And Zillow's going to make a freaking fortune on this motherfucker. I mean, it's going to be crazy. I don't know. I mean, I had a commenter on my blog after I posted my Zillow thing, bring this up about, you know, this is some sort of ploy by Zillow to get seller leads. And I'm like, it's not a ploy.
No, it's
that's
not a
actually
ploy
what they stated. Like, Errol on his announcement, Errol's like, yeah, you know, a third of the people who submit an instant offer request, they end up selling their house in 90 days. But out of that third, only 10% take an investor's offer. So I'm like, dude. So, I mean, let's say 1,000 inquiries
it's
are made.
It's genius.
Right?
It's, yeah.
It's brilliant. 1,000 inquiries are made. 330 of them are going to sell their house. 33 are going to sell to Zillow or to whoever, right? That leaves like 300 leads, 300 seller leads. Dude, I mean, what could they charge for that, right? So I'm like, yeah, no, this is a lead gen play. You know, I have to be careful with what I say. But I think if you look at the exposure, I mean, what are you looking at? Maybe $300 million if you're Zillow, maybe, right? In inventory risk.
Yeah.
They'll make that, I don't know, in a month, right, for seller leads.
You can tell me if this is the wrong kind of analogy, but to me, it's like casinos, right? They make their monies in the casinos. It's all about getting people on the floor. How do you get them on the floor? How do you get premier agents to become premier agents? How do you get agents to participate and pay more, right? Well, you have nice rooms and you have a big draw. Elton John's going to be playing here for whatever. You know, people could say, well, what? You're getting into concert business? What's that all about?
I know. Yeah. Right.
No, man, I'm not in the concert business. I'm in the casino business. And the way I get people in the casino, you know, I get Elton John here, right? I mean, so this could on some sense, especially if it's 10% of whatever, it's just, you just highlight the fact of, yes, we will buy your house. That gets more people into the program. Or even better, you have the same amount of people, you just charge them more. Right. So I don't want to say it's a bait and switch. That's not it at all. It's just smart.
Right.
Right. You find what people want, you deliver that or what they think they want. Because as you said, only if one of three close in 90 days or they all, whatever the stat is, but only 10% are actually taking the investor offer, you're getting them for what they want. But when they get there, they realize, you know what? No, it doesn't make
sense. I don't really want
everybody wins. 3%. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. And if Zillow loses a bundle on these homes that they bought, oh, well, you know, I mean, they're a big company. They can take it, I think. But yeah, I mean,
it could be just an advertising expense, right? I mean, really, at the end of the day.
The real issue is going to be what can they make on seller leads? And
absolutely.
In this market,
a lot of money.
I hesitate to even imagine what that price tag is going to look like. But fact is, agent's going to pay it day in, day out.
Yeah, and these other places like Open Door and everything, they have to become great at flipping properties. They have to become great at marketing those properties. Their whole model is dependent upon that. Zillow's whole model could be just about, sure, like you said, they're going to keep some inventory on there, but they don't have to do that because all this is going to do is facilitate them raising prices and or expanding their existing customer base.
Something just occurred to me, actually. Maybe this is how Zillow solves the affordable housing crisis. Okay, check it out. This is how it goes.
Here it is. Okay.
All right. So the three markets that they're in, the median price is $275,000. So we're not talking, you know, $3 million median price markets here. We're talking affordable, you know, cookie cutter subdivisions. Okay. So they buy, quote unquote, buy these homes at $275,000. Or they buy it at a discount. They buy it at a 10% discount. And in theory, they could hold it and flip it and whatever. But like you and I just talked about, where they're really going to make their money is on selling the listing leads, right? From the 90% who are like, no, give me the CMA.
Right.
So they buy $275,000 at $250,000, okay? And then they just sell it at $220,000. Just take the loss. Just eat it. Eat the loss right away, okay? Right. And we're just going to lose $30,000 on every house that we buy, but we're going to make $300,000 from selling the listing leads.
Right.
So why hold inventory? Just get rid of it through some low-income housing program, right? You know, if you come to Zillow and you buy through a premier agent and your income is below the median, you can buy it at 10% below what we bought it for. We'll just eat the loss. We'll just eat the 10% loss, write it off as a charitable deduction, get the houses off our, you know, balance sheet, and we're just going to make an effing fortune on seller leads.
What you say is interesting.
The affordable housing.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's affordable housing.
You know, they can either do that themselves or partner with, I'm sure there's a lot of affordable housing foundations.
Oh my God, yeah.
Again, they always talk about consumers. They always talk about want to be part of the solution out there. I think that would be a little bit too much of a reveal of actually that, you know, buying these houses are a ruse in a sense, or advertising to get seller leads. Really, that's all it is. Right. It turns out to be an advertising expense.
You realize we're giving like thousands of dollars worth of advice. Oh,
this is great advice too. Yeah, but man,
Zillow better advertise on industry something. Yo, yeah. Show some love.
But the goodwill that they could garner.
It'd be insane.
It'd be insane.
No, just think about this. It'd be insane. Just think about this, right? Let's say they do something like this. Let's say they're listening to this podcast and go, you know that Rob and Greg, they're pretty smart. Let's do that. So they go and buy 30 houses.
Yeah.
Okay, in the next couple months in Las Vegas. And then in, I don't know, August, you know, there's Spencer and Amy and Greg and Errol on TV with like the mayor of Las Vegas and the Las Vegas Affordable Housing Coalition. Some assistant secretary of housing and urban development, you know, saying we have taken a loss on these 10 houses and these 10 lovely families standing behind us, hardworking Americans now can own their own home because of the Z affordable, you know, whatever, you know, American dreams with a Z. Or no,
here it is.
Right?
Ready? I've already got the name. Okay. Zillow Cares.
Zillow Cares. There we go. There we go. Zillow Cares campaign. You know, that's like, oh my God, the PR value alone.
They should just if they don't do all of them, it's like part of our whole value proposition is like a portion of the homes we buy will be given back to the community.
Give it back to the community. Holy fuck. I mean, that's it. It's over. At that point, those boys could write off, you know, $3-4 million for PR expense. Not a problem. Yeah.
Because they're going to get so many houses. They're going to be able to flip some of them.
Yeah.
They're going to figure out through all their kind of whatever crazy math they do that.
Yeah.
These are a section that are going to be easy to flip. We're going to make a little bit of profit. These are going to be a little bit harder. And these ones, you know what? It's better for us to get the goodwill than go through the damn process. Right. So.
Right.
No, I love it.
So donate it to some, you know, local affordable housing initiative or not, maybe not donate it, but like, look, we pay $200 for this. We'll let you guys have for $100,000.
This is insane.
You know what I mean? We'll just write up $100,000.
We didn't even think about this before we started.
We didn't.
This is great.
Damn. Yeah. Damn, we're good.
Yeah. We should not publish this podcast right now.
Or call Greg. Hey, Greg.
Yeah, Mr. Schwartz.
Mr. Schwartz. We have some way for you to earn like $30 million worth of, earned media credits.
Dude, those guys are so like smart over there. They've got some whiteboard with a decision tree. I guarantee you, right on the whiteboard, it says Zillow Cares up here. Right? It's already mapped out, right?
I know.
Yeah.
If they do that, like we need to go sit in their office and be like, yo, I think you owe industry relations some money. Yeah. I think you should be our flagship sponsor or some shit. All right. So let me ask you this.
Okay.
Because I know time's kind of ticking.
Yeah.
What do you think the other guys do? Open door, offer pad, knock. You know, what do you think the other guys do?
You know, I just loved, and I wrote this, of what Eric Wu's response to this was.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you even remember this yourself, but...
The Microsoft one?
Well, yeah. it was more IBM, really, than Microsoft. When IBM introduced the PC, their IBM PC, Apple put out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal and other publications that said, welcome IBM, seriously. Right. And it talked about, you know, and Eric, this guy's at Open Door. I think Eric's too young, actually. I was talking to Errol about this to even know about this. You know,
I think that's when Keith they said, voice.
Welcome Zillow, seriously. I thought, oh my God, I was like just laughing in my seat when I read that. I think, you know, it's like anything else. You know, as a business person, and you know, one of the things I would get from young entrepreneurs is like, oh, somebody's already doing that, right? Like, that's a validation of your idea. Mm-hmm. So for Open Door, I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing for Open Door's investors, I should say, because now they can point and go, well, we knew this idea was huge. You know, Zillow's doing it now, the biggest player in the space. Right. I think it's
advantage.
Yeah. You know, based upon the conversation we just had, how far does Zillow really want to dip into this model, this market? We'll see. Mm-hmm. For sure, this is a good thing for all the other guys.
I mean, I think so, at least the, you know, technologically sophisticated. I do think this puts a lot of pressure on kind of the local flippers, right? I mean, I think those guys might find some pain out of something like this. But you know what? Their days are limited anyway, because there's so much so much of this action, like between Open Door, like I said, Offerpad, Knock, Zillow now, you know, whoever else is coming in next, I feel like maybe the local guys might be screwed. But I agree with you. You know, if I'm Open Door, I'm like, this is fantastic, right? They just validated us. And yeah, you know, some investors might be like, oh, I don't know, you know, now that Zillow's in the game. Others are going to be like, awesome, Zillow's in the game. We're doubling down, right?
Right.
Maybe one day Zillow will buy you for, you know, $10 billion. You know, who knows? So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think this is a good place to stop because I don't want to give out too much free information here to everybody.
Like my main angle on my post was sort of comparing Zillow and NAR.
Yeah, no.
And I think we have to talk about NAR.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe we should save that. Let's save that for when we got to talk about NAR and some of the things that they've been up to of late.
Yeah.
Because I think it does make an interesting comparison.
Yeah, let's save that. That's good.
All right, sir. Well, you know, another fun episode. If we do end up publishing this, seriously, man, Zillow, y'all need to be doing that. That's some smart shit we came up with right there.
Absolutely. I think so.
Zillow cares.
All right, man. Good talking to you.